Welcome to the program for Thursday, February 9th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today's program in the 3 o'clock hour is Industry Chatter, as we do every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. My guest of the program today is Gunnar Hellickson. He is Red Hat's Public Sector Chief Technology Strategist. And, Gunnar, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio. We've spoken before by phone, so it's good to see you face-to-face. Thanks for coming
great,
on today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Start with what Red Hat does for clients in the federal space, please.
Yeah, sure. So Red Hat is the largest provider of open-source software in the world, actually, and also in the U.S. federal government. So what we do is we take the software that's been developed collaboratively by communities of industry and individuals, and we package it up and make it useful for the federal enterprises.
The misconception that people always have, and I'm surprised at how high the level of people are where this misconception exists, is that open source equals free is one misconception, and the other is open source equals anybody can see the code anywhere, no matter how I develop it. Talk about those misconceptions and how far or close they are to reality.
Yeah, sure. So the first conception that it's free is in fact correct, right? So it's free as in, oh, the joke is that it's free as in beer and free as in speech, right? So the software is free for anyone to use and free for anyone to download. It's also free as in freedom, right? Mm-hmm. People say that open source has the ability to, you can use it, you can also modify it, and you can also take those modifications and give them to other people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how these communities work, is by is using those principles. So the misconception that it's free, though, the reason why it's a misconception is that often you people are excited, oh, hey, free software, I can just download it and start using it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyone that's in an enterprise knows that software is never really free.
Right.
Software is a living thing that needs care and feeding and updates and modifications.
Mm-hmm.
Where it becomes not free, that's where Red Hat comes in and mm-hmm. offers, the usual service and support and patches and security
right.
fixes, things like that.
Something that you said there interests me in particular. Mm-hmm. Software is free as in freedom, and you can modify it and share it with other people. I guess you also then have the freedom to modify it and not share it with other people if you don't want to. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there's a number of different open source software licenses available. Some of them say that you can do whatever you want with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Change it and keep it to yourself. There's another family of licenses that say that you have to, any changes you make, if you give someone the software itself, then you also have to give them the source code.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on which license you're talking about.
The reason I ask that is because a lot has been made of some work at the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
They've moved to open source software.
Yes.
And a lot of people raised eyebrows when Roger Baker made that decision for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was maybe part of the misconception there.
Yeah.
The default position isn't necessarily that VA is obligated to let anybody see everything associated with that software.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So back in 2004, actually, OMB told everyone what the rules were.
Mm-hmm.
There is no preference for open source software. Open source software in 2004, OMB said that open source software is commercial software. That
mm-hmm.
is, your procurement folks should treat it just like all the other kinds of software. It just so happens that you didn't pay money for the license.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a license, right? So what's interesting about I'm glad you mentioned the Vista project, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're taking their electronic health record system and open sourcing it to the community. There's actually a good lesson in this because the software for the Vista has already been available to the public and has been for years.
Mm-hmm.
It just hadn't gone out the door in an organized way.
Mm-hmm.
It went out the door through a FOIA request, actually.
Uh-huh.
And once that software left VA and was made available not under a license but under the public domain,
mm-hmm.
meant that anyone could do anything they wanted with it, and a number of companies sprung up. Each one created their own individual variant of it, which was, I suppose, great, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that making weather data available to the public actually encourages the, a multi-billion-dollar weather forecasting industry.
Yes.
The VA putting the software out actually created a whole ecosystem of private sector companies that that were able to make money selling and supporting the software.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news for the VA 20 or 30 years later is that all of the innovation that was going on out in the private sector was suddenly unavailable to the VA, and suddenly VA's VISTA suddenly had dozens of children who had nothing to do with the original VA project.
Uh-huh.
And so this effort, which really is I am very impressed with the vision of this VA project, is to properly launch VISTA as an open source project with licenses and governance and all the rest of it. And the hope is that it becomes the center of gravity for each of these individual private sector contributions.
Yes.
So the VA can benefit from the work that's going on in the private sector and vice versa.
Is this a model that other agencies can use? I imagine if they can, you advocate that they should.
Absolutely.
What's the takeaway where I'm sitting at Department of fill in the blank, and I have this system that I've been using, and it's a legacy system that it's been around for 25 years, and it's reaching the end of its useful life, and I'm considering proprietary, whether it's a waterfall or an agile development project or whatever. What's the advantage over proprietary development as opposed to an open source project?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to give you an answer, but probably the most definitive answer sits in the 2009 memo from the DoD CIO.
Uh-huh.
The memo itself was about 2 pages long, but there's an appendix to it, which is an extremely well-reasoned process for considering open source software. It mentions some of the disadvantages and mentions some of the advantages.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the advantages include the ability to compete your vendor. People are accustomed to buying software, and if I buy software from vendor X, I have to keep paying vendor X, and the moment I stop paying vendor X, I have to get rid of my software and go find something else. With open source software, you can keep the software, and all you're competing is the maintenance tail on the software. And never mind the fact that the acquisition cost is typically zero, right? You're paying zero for the software. There's no licensing fee,
right?
Although you may be paying for service and support from one vendor or another. So in Red Hat's case, most people were known for our Linux product or Linux operating system. People can acquire the Linux operating system, but when they stop paying Red Hat, they can keep using the Linux and go find someone else to support to support the software.
And because it's open source, theoretically, there are a number of other people who would be capable of doing that if for whatever reason they didn't want to use.
That's right. There's no
the
shortage
they started
yeah.
with.
Yeah, there's no shortage of people who would be happy to take money from you for supporting the software.
Now, what's the competitive advantage then for a company like yours?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So obviously the quality of the support is important. And so one thing that Red Hat did, which what I'm very proud of, is about 10 years ago we invented this the subscription model for software, which has since been copied by a number of other companies, because customers have to renew their subscription every year. Our support has to be very, very good. What we'd like to say is that every year is an election year at Red Hat, right? And if the value we're not giving customers isn't what it should be, then customers can much more easily move away from us than they could with a proprietary vendor. So the dynamic and the relationship between the software vendor and the customer is much better, in my opinion.
I want to talk about the subscription concept when we come back from the break, because I think there are a number of elements there that are giving some folks at agencies a little bit of heartburn. So let's talk about that when we come back with Gunnar Hellickson of Red Hat. He's their public sector chief technology strategist. He's my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
By the latest second-generation Intel Xeon processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are a perfect high-speed solution for lowering costs, improving utilization, and reducing server sprawl. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how together they can power your data center into the future. Talk to GovConnection's experienced federal sales team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Hey man, what's up? Angie went to Walmart and got this cool Pioneer HD radio receiver, and now she's like, eh, I don't know.
Simple stuff. Check out the buyer's guide at HDradio.com.
Cool buyer's guide. Oh, here's the Pioneer DEH-44, under $120 at Walmart. Angie, hip and smart.
See, dude, HDradio.com has the answers you need, and Walmart has the Pioneer with built-in HD radio technology you want. Now all you need to do is learn how to talk to girls.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
Hey, Eagles fans, tickets to All American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the athletic ticket office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena. Catch the Eagles' next home game Wednesday, February 15th against Navy at 7:30 p.m.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
I'm Jared Serbu. Here's what we're working on for tomorrow's edition of The Federal Drive. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office releases a bundle of new regulations to implement the America Invents Act. We talk to USPTO Director David Kappos. And what federal managers need to do to take the step up to the SES. We'll hear from an expert. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Gunnar Hellickson of Red Hat is my guest for the hour today. We talked a little bit, Gunnar, in the last segment about subscriptions and the concept of buying services on subscription and what that means for agencies. Are the IT departments at agencies getting comfortable with that idea that I buy something, that I buy this subscription for the foreseeable future rather than I buy this once, have people work on it 5 years from now or 25 years from now or whatever? I got to buy a new one.
Yeah, sure. So yes, they are comfortable with it. And the reason why they're comfortable with it is that it feels to them like maintenance, right? Mm-hmm. So you never just buy the license to the software. It's
right.
Always the license, and then you're probably paying 20% of that license every year on a maintenance tail for
mm-hmm.
it. So you come into the shops and you explain to them that this is just like maintenance. And by the way, there's no acquisition cost. There's no licensing fee.
Mm-hmm.
And they get it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
They also like the dynamic of it, the ability. The IT folks will never turn down the opportunity to fire somebody, right? So if they can kick a vendor out or have the opportunity to kick a vendor out, they'll take it.
Uh-huh.
And the subscription model makes that much, much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At least having the option to if you decide you need to.
Yeah.
On the acquisition side, some folks both on the government side and on the vendor side have told me they're not quite up to speed on it yet, and it's not a reluctance necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just they're not used to doing business that way.
Yeah.
Is that something that you're seeing as well?
Yeah. So, and Red Hat feels some of that too, right? So our subscriptions were built to be annual
mm-hmm.
subscriptions. As we move to these, service-based providers, we start seeing, it going from annual to monthly to weekly to daily, hourly, and so on.
Wow.
It becomes very complex to figure out your pricing, exactly what kind of value you're delivering, what kind of, you know, what the market will bear, and all the rest of it. And this is the, so we are having the same conversation as your typical proprietary software company. So subscription model, I think, gave us a leg up in this, you know, software as a service or infrastructure as a service. But it certainly didn't fix everything. There's still, you know, we still got stuff to figure out.
What is driving that fragmentation? It seems like almost a sifting where you pour the sand into a progressive smaller and smaller sifter.
Yeah. So it's so one of the big advantages of these cloud services is, you know, you say pay by the drink, but really it's having the service available on demand. So right now agencies, when they procure software, hardware, their IT systems, they have to size for what they think their maximum capacity is going to be. The promise of these cloud services is that they only have to buy for, say, the average load, and when they need to, they can go and spin up new services to accommodate a temporary increase in demand, and that temporary increase may last 10 minutes, it may last a month, it may last so on and so on. So what we're trying to solve with these kind of business models and what the acquisition folks are trying to figure out is how to accurately, fairly create those, that kind of more dynamic relationship between vendors and customers.
I wonder if there's a point of diminishing returns where it becomes difficult, so difficult for the agencies to do the tracking and bookkeeping on their end that it's not worth it to get quite that precise.
Yeah, well, so and this, we've seen the same thing in other industries, right? And in other markets where we've had this kind of volatility or this potential volatility, you see third parties pop up, right? You see brokers sorted out on people's behalf. And I think we're going to see exactly the same thing in these cloud markets where you'll take your request for a service to a broker and the broker will have some magical back end that will go and figure out your need and figure out what kind of costs you can bear and then ultimately pick a supplier for you.
Or maybe a group of suppliers depending on how it works. I mean, it's kind of the old, it sounds like the old travel agent model where travel agent might find me a great deal on one airline to go to the destination and a good deal to come home and it's not necessarily a round trip ticket. Is that kind of what you're talking about.
I think it's a great analogy. I think that's exactly right.
What kind of time frame do you think that broker type arrangement might develop on? That's a concept I haven't heard of before.
Yeah, so it's been mentioned in some of the policy documents coming out of OMB and certainly in some of the NIST thinking on cloud. Before we get brokers, or before we get effective brokers, I think we're going to need to see a lot more maturity on the standards side. You can't really have a broker if aren't standard interfaces.
Right.
And not just for the technical stuff, but for the billing and chargebacks and all the rest of it. All that stuff has to be standardized so it can be automated. And once it gets automated, I think it'll become practical to have kind of a robust broker industry.
Right. Do you think the standards that you're referring to are coming in a timely, appropriate manner? Is government paying attention to what they should be paying attention to as they're establishing these standards?
I think they're absolutely paying attention to the right things. I don't think they're such, based on the number of cloud conferences I've been to, I don't think we've left.
There's no lack of attention.
Yeah, that's right. No stone unturned, right? But I think that it can never move fast enough. But again, what we're really building right now as an industry and government is, I mean, we're building a completely new model for consuming information technology. And I think that's worth some time, right? And some care.
When you go into agencies for these meetings, what are the IT people asking you the most?
So what they're worried about the most?
What they're worried about, what they don't know about and want to educate themselves about, or any of that?
Yeah, so I think the number one topic of conversation for me is the worry about lock-in, right? So as people move to these cloud models, they're looking for standardization, which kind of makes that cloud work. But standardization nowadays mostly comes with consolidation. That is, going down to one vendor to provide everything. That makes this a lot easier, and it becomes much easier to deliver the capability in their minds. So they'll sign an ELA with a particular cloud vendor or virtualization vendor or whatever it is, and a few years into that ELA, they'll suddenly realize exactly how much money they're on the hook for, and they start getting some indigestion. And so what a lot of them are looking for is, yes, I would love to move to the cloud. I love the agility. I love that I can get stuff on demand, all the rest of it. But I also want options. I want choice. I don't want to be handcuffed to a single vendor. It's funny. funny. It reminds me of the move from these old big iron proprietary Unix systems over to x86 and the Intel based stuff. That's where we made our money, right? Is moving folks off of this proprietary stuff onto commodity hardware and standardization. And now I see people having mostly solved that problem, right? Everyone's more or less moved to Linux and onto x86, and now they're jumping back into exactly the same problem again, giving up their entire stack to one particular vendor. And so, as people are building their cloud strategies, they're paying a lot of attention to the danger of vendor lock-in, because the decisions they make today are going to be with them for quite some time.
Yeah, it seems like everything old is new again, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's right. That's right.
Gunnar Helligson's my guest. He's a public sector chief technology strategist for Red Hat, and we'll continue our conversation on industry chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, in just a moment.
Here's Colonel John Serdu, Military Deputy Chief, Combined Action Group, U.S. Cyber Command and NSA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by HP Enterprise Security.
A more secure internet really means more privacy, more safety in your financial dealings, more safety in internet commerce. And so we can make cyberspace a safer, more secure environment, and we can do that without impinging on people's constitutional rights.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Worried about cyber attacks, cyber espionage, and advanced persistent threats? HP Enterprise Security, powered by ArcSight, Tipping Point, and Fortify Solutions, gives you 360-degree security monitoring, enabling you to detect incidents, proactively test security to protect applications, and block attacks with adaptive network defenses. It has platform integration to help manage your agency's risk. Learn about HP Enterprise Security Solutions, powered by ArcSight, Tipping Point, and Fortify. Visit HPEnterpriseSecurity.com.
Meeting mission goals through health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology is working to identify some best practices for mobile devices. The project aims to help medical providers secure and protect health information on laptops, tablets, and smartphones as those devices continue to proliferate throughout the clinical sector. The ONC will gather public input to identify good practices and then plans to spread those practices through what it promises will be clear, concise, easy-to-understand language.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
How is the U.S. Air Force improving financial information and achieving audit readiness? What is the U.S. Air Force doing to improve its financial operations, become more efficient, and control costs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management and Controller, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Fewer years for teens? From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Today's teens' poor health habits might cost them years of life. A study found this in data on about 5,500 teens. Donald Lloyd-Jones of Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago examined risk factors for heart disease. Many teens had high blood sugar, low physical activity, and smoked. Their eating patterns were high in sodium and sugar-sweetened beverages and low in fruits, vegetables, fiber, and lean protein. Lloyd-Jones says teens are losing health they were born with.
We know that we tend to gain weight as we age through adulthood, so we're already seeing that our teens are off to a very poor start.
The study, presented at an American Heart Association meeting, was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Gunnar Hellickson on Industry Chatter today. He is Red Hat's Public Sector Chief Technology Strategist. And we talked to Gunnar about the concept of subscriptions and how both the IT side and the business side of agencies can get more accustomed to that. That's going to be especially critical over the next couple of years as we go to now pretty much everything as a service. Mm-hmm. What do I do inside an agency to get my people accustomed to the way that this is what's going to be coming, whether we like it or not? And we can have the internal debate at the water cooler about whether it should be that way or not, but it is. So how do we deal with that?
Yeah, sure. So what I recommend when I talk to agencies is there's three things to keep in mind as you're thinking about this brave new world, right? Mm-hmm. The first we mentioned earlier is guaranteeing choice. You want to make sure that you have flexibility. I mean, the whole point of moving to these services is that you should be able to easily move between them. So if I get a better price somewhere else, or if I get better features from another provider, I should pretty quickly be able to move from one to the other. Along with that comes standardization of your assets. I think a lot of folks who are moving, they started with virtualization. They may be playing with cloud now. They realize that once they, you know, a lot of these agencies, they take their workloads, move them into a virtualized environment, and then realize, well, wait a minute, why do I have five of these, right? You know, very shortly after the consolidation, you'll get an application rationalization movement. And we're seeing this in Navy, as a matter of fact. So as we're moving to this rationalization, the idea is that what we should be keeping in mind is that the standardization will allow us to kind of consolidate workloads, but again, not commit us to a single vendor, right? Mm-hmm. And maintaining that choice. So stricter adherence to standards, and particularly open standards, I think is going to be tremendously important as we move into these things.
Are there applications that are not well suited for a subscription model, or is it not quite as simple or generalized as that?
Yeah, that's complicated, right? So the subscription model, I'm sure that there are it would be great if actually we could buy all software that any software that does anything, buying it on a subscription model, that would be great. I think that there are certainly use cases where having a subscription model is difficult, mm-hmm. right? And it depends very much on what the customer is willing to handle, and also whether you can build a viable business around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The concept of subscriptions is still there. Are some folks that are just, it's scary, or it's we talked during the commercial break, that it's knocking over rice bowls or whatever. Is there any way around it? I mean, it seems to me, from what agency people are understanding and saying, that this is the way of the future, and it's starting to be the way of today.
Yeah, so I think that the knocking over rice bowls, right, is the breaking down of silos.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's less a function of the subscription model and more the demands of the cloud environment, right? If I have, again, you know, people virtualize these things, why do I have five of these?
Mm-hmm.
Once you move to these, once you commoditize the lower layers of the stack and you move to this new kind of paradigm, it becomes more difficult to hug your server.
Right? Yeah.
So I'm not sure that's directly related to the subscription model.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, it's certainly another consequence of moving to the subscription model and these services based, services, right?
Do you find that most of the people that you talk to are
culturally open-minded enough to be able to deal with these concepts? The technology is one thing, and the business case is another thing, and those are pretty cut and dried. Mm-hmm. The other one is that the cultural part of it is not nearly as cut and dried, I imagine.
Yeah, so it's funny. We see there's a number of different kinds of reactions to this, right? And especially among the younger set, fresh out of college, they're very accustomed to open source software. They understand subscription models. They understand cloud, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're shocked when they arrive at an agency and realize that agencies don't really have the same technology that you had available in your dorm room, right? Mm-hmm. So there's those, and it is wonderful to have that kind of a staff, having younger guys on the staff, younger girls on the staff who understand how all this modern software works and mm-hmm. how these internet-based services work. And then you get, I think the vast majority of folks are very pragmatic. They say, you know, great, we understand the advantages of the services model. How is this going to save me money? How is this going to make me more efficient and all the rest of it? And then of course you have, cynics who see this as a, you know, another fad, and they'll roll their eyes mm-hmm. and, you know, rubber stamp some stuff, pay lip service to it.
Right.
But I think the move is inevitable, just because the economies of the IT enterprise, we can't keep going the way that we're going without adopting these new models.
You mentioned young people and the experience they have when they come into government. I had a fascinating conversation with a veteran but very open-minded IT person at a federal agency at ELC back in October. And this person said to me, the four words that I hate hearing the most but love hearing the most at the same time are primarily come from young people, been at the agency a year or less, and those four words are, why can't I just, and then whatever the next statement
that's
is.
Right. That's right.
And it's that exact concept. Yeah. They're used to being able to produce whatever they're expected to produce in a particular way, mm-hmm. get into a structured bureaucratic organization. And I'm not using that term derogatorily,
sure.
but that's the reality of it, is that there are very specific policies and regulations and standards in place.
Yeah.
And you can't just whatever.
Yeah.
There's a procedure involved with it. Yeah. Most of the time for a good reason, but trying to navigate that is proving to be the source of a lot of friction.
It's one of the oldest stories in IT history, right? Is new folks come in, why can't I just? Mm-hmm. We're seeing the same thing with the consumerization of enterprises, mm-hmm. right? I want to be able to use an Android phone. I want to be able to use an iPhone.
Right.
If for no other reason than staff retention and recruiting. The ability to get good talent in, a lot of conservative enterprises are now realizing that they need to start getting more flexible about this stuff.
Is there a connection between what you do as a company and that commoditization of IT?
Yeah. Oh, that's a magic question.
Okay.
I owe you $20 for asking.
All right. Then let's talk about that when we come back from the break. And I am going to collect, by the way. Gunnar Hellickson is my guest. He's the public sector chief technology strategist for Red Hat. And we'll continue our conversation and I'll collect on my payment in just a moment.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. We live in a sports-crazed society, and what parent hasn't dreamed of their kid becoming the next big star? But that emphasis on excelling is taking its toll, with an increase in injuries.
I think it's probably because kids now become active in sports much younger. They also start selecting specific sports earlier, and I think what that then leads to are overuse injuries because they're never getting a break.
Dr. Amy McIntosh is a pediatric orthopedic surgeon at Mayo Clinic.
We're seeing ligamentous injuries like ACL injuries in younger and younger patients, where before they said, oh, those don't happen in patients that age. You don't see an ACL tear in an eight-year-old. We are seeing ACL disruptions in eight-year-olds now.
Sometimes there's nothing you can do to prevent an injury, but allowing time away from a sport for kids just to be kids can be very important, physically and mentally. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
Federal pay and benefits are once again being debated in Congress. The House has passed a one-year extension to the current federal pay freeze, and Senate Republicans have introduced a bill to freeze federal pay and hiring in order to stop massive automatic defense cuts in 2013. FederalNewsRadio.com's pay and benefits page has the latest on congressional action affecting your pocketbook. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search term pay and benefits.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
Rob Shriver, OPM's Deputy General Counsel for Policy.
We really are emphasizing transparency and internship opportunities. So our proposed pathways regulations require agencies to put up on our USA Jobs website some basic information about the internship opportunities that are available to them. It's a requirement that's not currently in place.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Gunnar Hellickson, Red Hat's Public Sector Chief Technology Strategist, is my guest on Industry Chatter, and I apparently struck a chord with you when I asked about the commoditization of IT, of the hardware, and how it fits with what your company and other companies are doing for the government. Mm-hmm. No guest has ever offered me $20 for the simple act of asking a question before, and so I must graciously decline that, but I would love to hear why that is so exciting to you.
Yeah. So if we look at the history of information technology, or actually, frankly, the industry of technology in general, technology usually starts with hobbyists, guys working in their garage, right? The classic story.
Yep.
As their technology gets more popular and more mature, we start seeing vendors grow up around that technology. Those vendors give the product distribution scale. They can create demand for that product. But eventually, vendors lose the ability to differentiate their products from their competitors. Eventually, the technology kind of settles, if you like. And once it's settled, it starts becoming a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And people no longer particularly care who they're buying it from as long as it's cheap and standardized and widely available.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking earlier during the break about no one builds their own electrical generator anymore.
Right.
At least not for work, maybe for fun. And the reason is because devices that generate electricity, well understood, perfectly commoditized, right?
Mm-hmm.
So rather than going and building my own generator, I'm more than happy to plug it into a wall plug.
Right.
So work your way up the stack from the generator, right? Now we go to servers.
Mm-hmm.
We as an industry have more or less standardized on x86, although there are a number of other very capable platforms.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of them right now are x86 platforms. And so moving to this x86 architecture has kind of made us not think too much about hardware. And likewise, so as we move up the stack, things get more and more commoditized. Now, when we get to software, it gets very interesting because how do you commoditize software if the software is only available from a single vendor?
Mm-hmm.
That is fraught with peril, right?
Right.
Back to the vendor lock-in problem we were talking about earlier. Open source represents a fantastic way to commoditize a software problem, right? To commoditize software in a way that doesn't lock you into a single vendor.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a number of other secondary effects to it, which are really great. When you use the open source model, I'll use Linux as the example. When you use the open source model, you make yourself available to innovations in the software that come from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm a proprietary software vendor, I'm only able to get innovation if I pay for it.
Right.
I have to hire staff and people to come in and work on my code. If it's open source software, I can have a problem on Friday and wake up on Monday and someone has solved my problem over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to pay them, but they contributed the code back because this collective effort improves it. It raises all boats, right? Through this collaborative innovation process, we're in the context of this kind of commoditized software, we're suddenly solving each other's problems and making it much easier to go focus on the higher level problems further up the stack.
Mm-hmm.
Linux performed this for the operating system, and we're seeing the same thing with things like Hadoop, the MapReduce. We're seeing the same thing with it's happening in storage, it's happening in application servers, it's happening on all the technology that runs the public clouds today.
Mm-hmm.
That represents a commoditization of all those tools.
So what's the connection between that and the 50 people in my organization that want to bring in their iPads and the 30 people that want to use iPhones? Phones and the 30 people that want to use Android phones, and every one of those is a different one, and on and on and on and on.
Yeah. So this is the consumerization of IT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Now that this technology has become so widely available, it used to not be a big deal if somebody wanted a particular piece of equipment in their job, and it was because there was not the market wasn't wide enough, and the tool and the devices weren't inexpensive enough,
mm-hmm.
Where it became a widespread problem.
Right.
But now all of this incredibly powerful computing platform. All of these incredibly powerful computing platforms are now available to almost anybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's that that commoditization of these mobile platforms. Now, the commoditization in the case of the mobile platforms is not complete. Obviously, we have this very balkanized kind of market,
mm-hmm.
And very differentiated. So it's not quite at that commodity stage there. But you can see how it's getting.
Yeah, you can certainly see the trend line, and you can see there's already some players that are appearing to shake out of the system.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why why this extremely complex and extremely powerful technology has become so widely available,
mm-hmm.
Is because of open source software, right? The Android operating system, famously open source. The vast majority of cell phones actually today have at least a little bit of open source software in them. And it's that commoditization of the software inside that makes it possible to sell a smartphone for $200, right?
All right, so you've kind of taken me to a point I wanted to get to throughout the course of this conversation, and that is something about this has to be a disadvantage to the end user. Because right now we've talked about costs go way down,
mm-hmm.
No licensing up front, you'll lose weight, your skin will clear up, all of that. Everything's wonderful. There's got to be not a dark side, that's a bit nefarious, mm-hmm. but there has to be something that you're giving up to obtain all of these other good things, isn't there?
Yeah, so you lose a certain amount of agency,
mm-hmm.
In the same way that if you stop building your own car and buy a car off the lot,
uh-huh.
You're making some sacrifices, right?
Uh-huh.
It's very difficult for me to go to a car lot and buy a car with flames on the side, right? Or wood paneling on
uh-huh.
my station wagon, right?
That's
uh-huh. that's hard to come by nowadays. And so you lose some of that customization, but the benefits far outweigh the disadvantages, right?
And I guess to use your analogy, if you want, once you obtain it, you can add the wood paneling to the side
exactly.
if you want to. Is that
exactly.
right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's okay. exactly right. And the trick with customization and software, and this goes again back to the problem of stovepipes in the federal agencies, right? You talk to somebody in a federal agency, and they're very sentimental about their systems, and for very good reasons, right?
It's worked fine for 30 years.
It's a beautiful. Every system is a beautiful and unique snowflake, right? I don't mean to make too much light of it. I mean there are good reasons for feeling that way. But in the same way that we don't ask agencies to go build their own computers,
mm-hmm.
In order to get their mission done, we don't necessarily, as we move to these services models and they become viable economically. There becomes less and less of a reason for them to, be messing down at the hardware level or,
mm-hmm.
or messing with operating systems and things
mm-hmm.
like this. Yeah.
We've talked a little bit about some trend lines that we've seen. When we come back to wrap up, I'd like to see if you want to extend those out for a little bit and see what may be on the horizon for the not too distant future. I'm not going to ask you to go too deeply into the crystal ball, but we'll continue our conversation with Gunnar Hellickson of Red Hat in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
A 21st century information network for the Defense Department is among the top priorities for 2012 at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Tony Montemurano is Director of Strategic Planning and Information at DISA. He's one of the agency leaders heading the effort to get the network running as it should. He says his ideal scenario would be for the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, and DISA to share one approach and one infrastructure for IT.
A new company with more than 50 years of experience, ITT Defense is now ITT Excellus. The reliable, flexible partner you've come to know is now tightly focused on providing innovative, essential C4ISR solutions and information and technical services. Work with a true partner, ready to solve your challenges with situational agility and a record of rapidly fielding affordable solutions.
Experience the power of ingenuity at excellusinc.com.
Register now for AFSEA's 11th Annual Homeland Security Event, February 28th through March 1st at the Reagan Center. Focusing on vigilance during challenging times, doing more without more, this is the venue where you will hear firsthand about the critical IT issues facing our country in the fight against terrorism. This event is proudly sponsored by AT&T, Booz Allen Hamilton, CenturyLink, General Dynamics, InfoZen, NJVC, Kinetic North America, SAIC, and Verizon, and features speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry. Panelists from across the Homeland Security enterprise will dialogue on border security, cyberspace, immigration, disaster response, doing business with DHS, and other critical issues. Contractors and agencies will showcase the latest security products and solutions in the exposition. Register to attend or exhibit at afcea.org, keyword homeland. That's afcea.org.
Experience GW Basketball in one of D.C.'s best college venues, the Colonials Club. As a member of the Colonials Club, you will enjoy a game day atmosphere that is unmatched in Washington area college basketball. Your philanthropic donation and loyal support for GW Athletics provides countless opportunities to our student athletes in pursuit of both their academic and athletic goals. Call 202-994-7325 to join the Colonials Club today and help raise high the Buff and Blue.
With a $1.2 trillion cut to federal spending expected over the next decade, agencies need to consider more than individual programs. They have to dramatically change the way they do business. Join AFSEA Bethesda February 24th at the Bethesda North Marriott for its annual federal budget preview as a distinguished panel of CIOs, including Richard Spires, Roger Baker, Chris Smith, and Rob Carey, discuss what technologies and initiatives will continue to drive IT spending in 2013. Register today at afseabethesda.org/febbreakfast.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Gunnar Hellickson of Red Hat's been my guest for the hour. We've talked about a number of trends that you're seeing in government right now pertaining to open source software and some of the other issues we've discussed, especially subscription services and so on. Draw those trend lines out for another 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, especially in the context of the budget request we're about to see on Monday that's expected to be a lot smaller in some cases than it's been before. Where do you see things like this headed for an IT professional who's really concerned about what's happening day to day and maybe doesn't have the time that he or she would like to strategize that far into the future?
Yeah, sure. So I think to date, the best document that I've seen that kind of sketching out what the future might look like is the draft IT shared services policy.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of you can think about it as a superset of the cloud first policy. Its nickname, in fact, is shared first.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that we talked about this at the break. We have 93 agencies that need to respond to FOIA. They have 93 different FOIA systems. And that stops making sense when we've got the budget that we've got.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to see many more shared services. I think we're going to see fewer applications shared among more agencies. I think that we're going to see a lot more on-demand capacity rather than building for the maximum. We're going to burst into probably government clouds, right? And I think that in terms of our application development and how we procure applications, I think we're going to start worrying much less about the nitty-gritty, way down, deep details,
mm-hmm.
And we're actually going to be focusing on the higher value software further up the stack, stuff that's much closer to the mission.
One of the complaints that industry has had about the idea that you're talking about is, well, if everybody's using the same, then there's no competition. But that sounds like, from what we talked about at the beginning of the program, mm-hmm. that's not the case if everybody can see what the software is, everyone has access to it,
that's right.
Then they can customize their potential solutions to servicing yeah. that however they want to.
Exactly right. This is okay. one of the reasons why the shared first policy is so exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's because open source software is a great way to maintain this kind of commoditization and standardization that everyone wants without sacrificing your ability to have a functioning market,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're not accidentally creating monopolies.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as I can figure out what to do with that code to what I think is make an improvement on it
yeah.
and potentially sell that to you,
that's the only barrier to entry. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's it. No, that's exactly right. And I think that we'll use the FOIA example. Another benefit of this is the ability for governments, plural, to work together on software, right? So anywhere there's a federal mandate, you have federal agencies that need their software to work with state, local agencies. And everywhere we have that touch point, we have a great opportunity for open source. The New York State Office of Temporary Disability Assistance did this with their eligibility system. They ended up sharing their rules that came from CMS. They implement them on their system and they share them with the states that are they're nearest to them. So now we got five states working together to solve a problem given to them by CMS, and it's fantastic.
Trend lines that you see in other areas stretching out over the next, say, 18 months to 3 years?
Yeah, so to put a cap, I guess, on everything that I just listed, I think platform as a service and software as a service is really where a lot of the action is going to be. A lot of agencies see platform as a service as a means to rationalize their application portfolio, encourage the sharing that we're talking about, and capture all the benefits of these cloud systems. So platform as a service, I think, is getting hot and is going to be very hot for quite some time.
I wish we had more time. There's a lot more I'd like to cover, but I've really enjoyed having you here for the hour, Gunnar.
That's
I appreciate
great.
Your time.
Thanks for having me.